The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
We're going to kick things off with our afternoon update, catching up on all that has happened today. Brian Mahan is with me, political correspondent with the Irish Daily Mail, and Brianna Parkins, journalist and columnist with the Irish Times. Folks, you're both very welcome. We heard in the news headlines there, Brian, a clip of Rishi Sunak in the House of Commons today. So this row between government here, government there, no sign of abating?
No, absolutely not. And I think the British are having their local elections tomorrow or Friday. And everything is kind of focused around that in the UK. And the Rwanda policy is Rishi Sunak's, you know, only flagship policy he has left before the general election that he wants to see implemented and be seen to be successful. So Micheál Martin and Helen McEntee have given him an open goal and he's going to keep kicking it into the net.
Yeah, Brianna, if you were advising Rishi Sunak, I mean, this is an open goal, isn't it? They're like, what do you lose by kicking Ireland for a while and suggesting that you're not going to take anybody back? Very little. I mean, the relationship cools for a few days, a few weeks, a few months at most. But if there's a political win in there somewhere, yeah, you grasp it.
There is, you know, a comms advisor somewhere humming, can't touch this to himself, when he heard Helen McEntee say that, you know, over 80% of people claiming IP, international protection applicants, were coming over the border. They saw that as a complete open goal and said, yeah, this is proof that the Rwanda policy is working. They knew the Daily Telegraph or the Conservative press in the UK would pick it up and run with, you know, Rwanda threats, deportation threats, see thousands of migrants pour into Ireland. Very, very happy with that. I don't see the rollback happening. I mean, you've got two countries who are now, you know, struggling to cope with the demands put on them, the humanitarian demands put on by migrants. Ireland has sort of been caught a bit with their pants down because we don't have a strong border force. We don't have a particularly well-funded military who can patrol the sea border. And now that's being tested, we're traditionally a country that people leave, not come into, and we don't have the resources either in the policing or the provision of accommodation or, you know, social work sort of aspects to deal with it. So I really think this row is going to be interesting. I'd like that they've added the UK to the list of safe countries to kick them back over the border. It'll be interesting to see if this emergency legislation pans out. But I don't know how this is going to work. Is this just going to be like two, you know, at the border, we're going to see like two sides of, you know, Gardaí and police just shuffling.
You like that border between Pakistan and India,
yeah,
around Kashmir with kind of people marching
well,
up and down. But Brian, I mean, the answer to Brianna's question actually was on the front page of your newspaper yesterday, because I wondered. So Chris Eaton-Harris, the Northern Ireland secretary, was at an event on Monday with the Taoiseach, and he actually kind of talked down the whole thing. He said, listen, we actually don't have a problem with this legislation being prepared by the Irish government. And I thought, how could he not have a problem given what Rishi Sunak is saying? And then your own newspaper yesterday on the front page revealed that when the previous legislation that they're kind of mimicking now was in force, not a single asylum seeker was actually sent back to the UK. So no wonder they don't have a problem with it. It actually is ineffective.
Yeah, and the one time they tried to do it, they were told by the High Court that they couldn't. Look, I don't think there's any loss of kind of irony that Rishi Sunak is now saying, you know, the Irish government should be careful about putting Gardaí on the border. I'm sure there are many people in South Armagh kind of having a dark chuckle to themselves that a British Prime Minister talking about not putting police on the border. So, I mean,
He's loving this, Rishi Sunak. He gets to repeat all the French talking points about having no legal obligation to take people back. And then, little digs about the Irish cherry picking around the border.
Yeah, and that's just life. And might I add, you know, Helen McEntee made the 80% remark last week, but I think actually it's Micheál Martin's remarks, which he made when he was abroad last week. He was the one who specifically said the Rwanda policy is the issue here. And that's what the Telegraph picked up on. So it started with Helen. Micheál was asked about it. And it's actually Micheál's remarks which have actually maybe officially caused the fuss, not Helen. If one was to actually defend Helen for once in her life.
What's the view behind the scenes in Leinster House as to how big a row this is? Like, are they looking at it in the context of kind of the first issue you brought up, which is, listen, there's local elections coming up. Let's just put the heads down and get through that and we'll hammer out some sort of agreement.
I think in the medium term, it will kind of return to kind of the average kind of set of relationships. But this is a headache nobody wants in the Irish government. And that's kind of just as simple as it is. And unfortunately, you know, Rishi Sunak is 20, is 20 points down in the polls. So he will take any opportunity he can to say, Rwanda, 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 it works, it works, it works. And we have given him the open goal.
We keep talking in this row about the kind of the government here and government in London. Brianna, Brussels has to play a part in all of this, because one would assume, like, Rishi Sunak or whoever it happens to be, James Cleverly, whoever on the British side is kind of negotiating any deal that might be done, will say, well, hold on a minute, if we're taking him back, we're sending him back. You know, if we take him back from the Republic of Ireland, we're sending him back to France.
So we're going to have, like, the daddy EU is going to get involved? Is that what's going to happen?
I think so, yeah, exactly.
I think it's interesting.
I think on some level we want them to get involved
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, we want dad to, like, yeah, come and sort it out. But, it's all around these ideas of where you first claim asylum, and is this a secondary country? Can you actually send people back? Do you have the authority? Now, the International Protection Office allegedly does have that authority if someone has claimed asylum in another country, whether it's in the EU or the UK. We also have a sort of weird common travel agreement that's not really affected by this, but kind of still comes into play a little bit. So they do have the power to pick and choose, or to determine, sorry, it's a better word, what country is responsible for taking that person. And it's interesting, just on that 80% figure earlier, the Refugee Council has disputed that claim, saying that actually, just because we're seeing, you know, more people present directly to the International Protection Office doesn't mean that they're coming down from the border. They can get through immigration. Just because they're not claiming asylum at the airport doesn't mean that they're, you know, coming in from the border. You can claim it later if you pass through immigration with your documents. So that's another thing to keep in mind as well. We don't actually know how realistic that 80% figure is.
Yeah, this is another aspect of it all that just kind of, I don't know, does it astound me, Brian, or kind of infuriate me? Is
both.
Both maybe in equal measure. How little we know about the problem we're trying to solve. Very hard to solve a problem when you don't know what the problem is. And even like how people have accessed the country. Helen McEntee was asked about this at an Oireachtas committee. And she said, yeah, that data is collected, but not in a way that is searchable. In other words, it's just handwritten down on a piece of paper and it's stored in an office somewhere.
But it's just,
there's no kind of control F you can do on that.
But it's also this emblematic of the wider kind of piece of that 80%. Where, like, she could have volunteered, but she didn't, that actually we haven't returned anybody. So was she trying to frame it or spin it that, you know, when we get this kind of tweak to the legislation, which came to Cabinet this week, that actually we'll be able to send loads back? Because that's how I understood it. And it's my job to try and understand or infer what politicians are implying. So therefore, presumably Joe Soap also thought that as well. And then it transpires the following week when we simply ask the Department of Justice, how many people have you sent back under the previous arrangement? And they say a big fat zero. That drives people absolutely bonkers. They're like, you have a system in place, but you haven't actually done it. And then they blame COVID and they blame the High Court and they blame everybody but themselves. It drives the average Joe bonkers.
That is actually a very good explanation of Irish bureaucracy and Irish politics. To an outsider, I was like, oh, actually, that encapsulates a lot for me.
Yeah, it does. That resonated with your experience,
yeah,
Brianna. Chris thinks it's all a conspiracy. This is a Fine Gael minister giving a dig out to the Conservatives ahead of an election. No surprise there, given the same political ideology. It's looking like Rwanda is going to work as planned for the UK in terms of dissuading people from coming to the country, says somebody else, and lots of other texts along those lines. 087 1400 106. Can I ask you both about another political story, or certainly it's in the realm of politics today, but kind of reverberates outside, safe access zones. So this bill has gone before the Shannon and has been approved, I understand, as well. Is that right, Brian?
Yeah, but just gone through.
So on its way to the Oireachtas. Is that next?
I think that's the final step, yeah. So it did it all into the Shannon and off to Michael D. Higgins. Yeah.
So how exactly is this going to work, Brianna? Do we know?
So 150 media exclusion zones around obstetrician offices, gynecologist clinics, anywhere potentially where abortions are being performed, but also just places that attracted protests in the first place. That's the thing that people don't understand, that a lot of women trying to access these services who felt harassed and threatened by graphic banners, people having chants. These are people, you know, potentially having DNCs or having, you know, going through miscarriage or having to, you know, go through other heartbreaking procedures that had to put up with this. So the bill is designed to protect them. I'm surprised it's taken this long to pass.
Yeah, six
to be
years.
Honest. I was like, geez, when I was like, haven't we already passed that? I was really, really shocked. But, you know, there's been arguments around, does this impact constitutional rights, like the rights to protest? But, you know,
are they still happening, these protests outside the hospitals?
I haven't been made aware of any recently, but they were happening last year. You know, we saw complaints. I think there was a complaint made directly to Limerick Hospital about a woman who felt really harassed and upset having to go in. And they usually take the form of, you know, either sort of banners saying praying for aborted children. Sometimes there'll be graphic kind of images of, you know, either fetuses or sort of miscarriage attempts or whatever, just really unpleasant photos. Sometimes they'll attempt to speak to women to try and dissuade them from having an abortion. They will pray, they will do all kinds of things, hand stuff out. So that's kind of what we're seeing. We're not seeing, you know, truly aggressive acts like we've seen in the US, you know, where we've seen people killed, doctors and nurses shot by anti-abortion protesters. It doesn't mean anything extreme as that, but it has been intimidating to people trying to access those clinics.
And I think also it's worth remembering that we do have the 3-day waiting limit period in the Irish legislation. So any woman who is going in to get an abortion has had to go through that 3-day period. So as I think was discussed during the referendum, most women don't have an abortion on the fly at the risk of stating the obvious. But even when they do make that decision, they have to wait a further 3 days. And then on top of that, some women were being faced with these protests or prayer groups outside of the hospitals, and they say that they felt intimidated.
Would there be any appetite politically to extend this legislation to other areas and stop people protesting outside politicians' homes?
I don't know is the honest answer. I certainly feel like the government is looking at ways in which it can perhaps further protect politicians. And it does seem like we are seeing happen more and more frequently at the moment. And, you know, it's my job to kind of ask, you know, annoying questions and irritate the hell out of them. But at the end of the day, they should be able to go home to their families and, you know, be in the safety of their own home.
Brianna, one would suspect, and I don't know myself, so I asked whether there is political appetite to do this. One would suspect some reluctance might be born out of the kind of, I guess, the notion that by doing it, you actually play into the hands of the protester. You know what I mean? Like one of the, like they're the government and the politicians are the enemies of the people. That's kind of the cut and thrust.
Yeah, I mean, like if you want to go down the take an inch, take a mile defense, which, you know, that was the same with gay marriage. It's like, what's next? They'll let us marry our farm animals. It'll be like, what's next? What, they're going to, you know, ban protesting in the streets. We can't protest ever again. There'll be no protests against, you know, the Israeli aggression in Palestine. No, we have very strict rules around protesting, actually. Like you have to apply for a permit to go down O'Connell Street or to march through the city. There are certain rules on how you can do things and express that political opinion. And really, these protesters, if they wanted to change abortion, if they want to change legislation, they can protest outside the Dáil. I think it's really gutless to harass women, probably on one of the toughest days of their lives, and harass them on a one-to-one basis. I think that's not a protest. That's intimidation.
All right, before you go, can I ask you about phone etiquette? Do you answer your phone every time it rings, Brianna?
God, no.
I knew you'd be a filterer. Why don't you answer the phone?
Do you know what? It's been the rise of fraudulent calls, scam, phishing calls.
Not true. You can still answer and then hang up when you realise it's fraudulent.
If I don't recognise the number, I usually don't answer it.
But what if it's somebody you know who's just using your phone you don't know?
Then they'll leave me a voicemail.
Do you check your voicemail?
She doesn't listen. I bet you she doesn't.
My voicemail does say, please leave me a text. But I if it's important, they will find a way to get through to me.
Brian, you have, surely in your job, you have to answer your phone.
Except when my editor's calling me. But yeah, 99 times out of 100 I do, and I would plead with all of my sources to always answer their phone when I go.
So on a more serious note, this is kind of a survey about how few young people actually answer their phone. They prefer texting and leaving voice notes. I think, at the risk of sounding like old man doesn't understand young people, Brianna's nodding as I say that. I mean, I think you lose something in not talking to people face to face or on the phone, having an actual conversation, don't you? And just doing it by text.
I talk to people on the phone. I'm not some kind of, you know, complete freak. But if I get an unknown call from a weird number, I mean, I had a really nasty thing which happened to me. I think it happens to lots of women in, you know, public life or as a journalist, where my number must have got out somewhere and I had some weird phone calls going on. So for me, it's more of a safety issue and a protection issue that I do this. But I think for others, it's just that nervousness of like, oh my God, what are they telling me about? It has to be bad news. If someone calls me, if it's from my family and it hasn't been prearranged, I'm like, who's dead? is Granny still breathing? Do you know what I mean? It just has this fear factor.
Oh yeah, well,
now.
I do have that reaction. Yeah. There's certain people who ring me at a certain time and like, why would they be ringing me now? This could not be good news.
I wonder, we keep seeing these surveys about how the young generation, which is just below me, thank God, are the loneliest in Europe or whatever. And I wonder whether there's the link between them not having regular phone calls.
I think you're right.
Like
I think you're right.
Journalist says, answer your phones.
Answer your phones. I spoke to a friend of mine from down in Australia, and he rang me as I was leaving the house today, and I spoke to him all the way to Dublin. And we're in constant contact by text, but the phone call was better.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It makes a huge difference. I think you should try. But I think maybe because I'm Australian and I have to pre-schedule my phone calls with my family, otherwise the time zones are too weird. Mm. But yeah, generally I would prefer a text being like, hey, can we have a phone call about X? Or I'll call you at
young
this time.
Young people should be more like us, I think that's what I prefer. Well, we're young people, aren't we? We in the collective sense?
Just about.
Come on, don't look so sceptical, Brian. Brian Mann is a political correspondent with the Irish Daily Mail. Brianna Parkins, journalist and columnist with the Irish Times. Thank you both very, very much. Barry in Kilcock says, does Rishi Sunak realise that this is going to be the catalyst for a united Ireland? Absolute control of your borders would be a great selling point for people sitting on the fence. Simple solution, says Richard the Thatcher. Instigate a 32-county republic immediately and monitor the border for those pesky Brits. What could possibly go wrong with that? Implement the law properly on immigration, and it will sort the problem out. And lots of other texts on the immigration issue. More than anything else, I really thought it would be the banning of smoky flavouring that would excite the people today, but not so.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.